set.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul, and I'm talking to Simon Cornell from Antarctica.
Yeah, I am literally in Antarctica. I mean, I'm on a ship, we're docked in a bay in Antarctica. We're right down there. It's unbelievably stunning. Like, as in words, can't even begin to describe how astonishing and beautiful it is. It's ridiculous. I'm not usually in awe of stuff, but I am in awe right now.
I'm in just as a majestic of a place. I'm in Detroit, Michigan right now. So, you know, same thing. We got penguins too.
The contrast is amazing.
We were talking beforehand and you said you're not able to like take photos, like every photo you're taking is just coming out terribly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a well-known phenomenon that whenever you see something amazing and take a photo of it, the photo very rarely does it justice. Most people have experienced that, but here it's that to a factor of 100. Every time I look at something and take a photo, I just instantly look at the photo and it's just nothing. It's less than 1% as good as the actual reality.
That's good. That means it's a special place, and it can't be captured on film or digital.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, and a lot of it is just how much of the wonder is being immersed in it, being completely surrounded in every direction. Just the mountains, the icebergs, the snowscapes, the ocean, the penguins, the seals. Just the wildlife diversity is amazing as well.
It makes you think about your little magic show and how it doesn't matter, right?
Well, yes and no. I'm down here. I brought along my friend Mike Costa, famed TV writer, as the quote-unquote travel companion, just friend to keep me sane. It's great having him here. And we've been talking a lot about all that stuff, about how we both work in theoretically frivolous pursuits, but at the same time, they're not, though, because a lot of the entertainment and arts and media is often what keeps people's lives happy and functional in between dealing with just the stresses of existence as a human being.
I think so. I heard Seinfeld talking about something recently, and he was doing some sort of Meals on Wheels thing with his family for December, and they walked into a room and they saw that this older person was watching old episodes, reruns of Seinfeld, and it was kind of the first time it really hit him. He's like, oh, we made this thing, and it reached, you know, crazy amounts of people in their living room, and they otherwise wouldn't have been able to experience this, you know, entertainment, this joy, whatever you want to call it. So I think there's validity to what we do. I mean, I think we're pretty harsh about it, rightfully so, a good amount of the time. But I think you and I came up with the phrase in Macau, add that to your bingo. You and I came up with the phrase in Macau of making the people happy, and I've been consciously trying to do that every show.
Yeah, completely. I'm actually looking through my saved phone images, trying to find a quote that's really relevant to this, that really touched me, and if I eventually manage to find it, I will mention it. I will quote it, if I can ever track it down.
See, I just make up quotes that I've heard. I botch past quotes I've heard. You're a good person, and you actually want to get them correct.
I'm dedicated. Nice. I still have my rule about I will never lie on stage. I will never like tell a story that's not completely true, which I know is a very unusual rule.
I really love that. I think there's something kind of special about that, and I think it enhances the show, and I guess, like, in the back of my mind, I kind of have that rule too, where you don't, because I think if you're audibly lying to people in a sentence, and, you know, pulling some sort of sleight of hand or some sort of secret moment, it really is kind of a double whammy of, I don't know, taking the audience for some sort of a ride that, because I think people are, a lot of audiences just assume you're lying to them, but if there's not a moment in the show that is untruthful, at least verbally, I think that's kind of a special thing.
Yeah, completely. I found it. Found the thing. This is about sort of the, when we worry about the frivolousness of our jobs. This is a quote from an interview with Tom Baker, one of the original Doctor Who's, the fifth or sixth Doctor Who. I don't know it well enough to know exactly, but kind of the most iconic and popular, I think, of the original Doctor Who actors. And this is from an interview in Vortex magazine from way back. And he was asked, what's your one biggest Doctor Who memory? And he replied, I remember a man stopping me in Oxford Street once, looking at me with absolute incredulity. He couldn't believe it. He said, Tom Baker? A man in his late 30s. I said, yes. He said, Tom Baker. I said, yes. And he looked at me, and in his brain, he catapulted back in time. And he said, you know, when I was a boy, I was in a home for children. Nobody wanted us, you know? It was terrible. And you made Saturday nights good. And I went to say something to him, and I could see him so close to tears that he couldn't speak. And he shook his head as if to say, don't go on, don't remind me. And he just did a thumbs up gesture. Such a common thing, isn't it? But suddenly backed up with an expression on his face through his tears that was a knighthood. It was a knighthood, just a thumbs up, meaning it was great and thanks. It's incredible, isn't it? Just a gesture. And God, that quote gets me. Like the power of these apparently trivial, frivolous things that sometimes can mean so much to people in ways that we might never even know about or even be able to imagine.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. I am choking up just thinking about that. Thank you for making us all cry.
Yeah.
That's great.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we are achieving that, but it's at least possible to do some genuine, profound good in the world.
I am in my show. I don't know what you're talking about.
One can strive. One can strive. But that was something that Derren Brown talked about. Derren Brown talked about in his book Pure Effect, that we don't realize that we are often people. He would be performing, doing walk around magic back in the early days, long before he was Derren Brown. And he would often find people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, come up to him and tell him a story about a magician they saw 60 years ago, 50 years ago. Just, oh, this one time I remember this magician did this thing. And he realized that these performances we're doing, some of them will stay with people their entire lives. They will become memories that they carry with them for that long. And that was when he really realized he really wanted to start taking it seriously and really putting effort into making every moment great, not just kind of phoning it in and getting by.
Yeah, that's a special thing. And I can't really overthink that, because then it becomes a weight I have to bear during the show. But I think if you keep that, I'm not even like making a joke. Yeah. I overthink that big time. I'm like, oh wow, this is a lot of people. Like, this is their impression of the art form. And I think that that's a great thing to, I've thought about that many times too. That's a great thing to bring up with, I feel like we've mentioned that possibly before, that Derren Brown moment, but I think we all maybe go through that as performers, or I think the moment we decide to hopefully take our careers a little bit more serious and realize that it's just not, because I often feel like I'm going through the motions, and then you hear something like that where people either compliment on something you did or something, a show they saw years ago, and you realize, oh, this stuff does matter, and it's not just kind of a, I don't know, magical BS, which it can feel like sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, I had an experience a bit like that where back in, I think it was about late 2013. And without going into too much personal detail, I was at one of the lowest points in my life. Like, everything was terrible. Like, I was just personally, career-wise, I was in the midst of like deep, deep depression. Everything was, being alive was horrible. It was just a really bad time. And there, it was probably a period of, like, part of it was a massive breakup, again, without going into details, like something that had been really, anyway, a whole massive breakup, a lot of other shit going on. I was just in a very, very dark place. And it was something like a good 2 or 3 months. I was just miserable. Like, not a moment went by without that foggy, voices of demons in your head about everything's terrible. And then the first moment, and it was such a powerful moment where I had a respite from that, was, of all things, the very first ever episode of Black Mirror. And anyone who knows the show will know it's not a very uplifting episode. It's very dark and it's very screwed up. But it was so transfixing. It was so powerful. It was just such an astonishing piece of TV. It emptied my head. It, for the first time, all the other terrible, bad crap in my head went away. And as the episode ended, I suddenly realized that there was this stillness inside my mind that I had forgotten what it felt like. It had been so many months since I felt that. And it's just an episode of a TV show. And it's a obviously a very powerful TV show, but still just a piece of art, entertainment media. It was the moment where my life started to get better, just being able to feel what it felt like to not be weighed down by all the terrible shit.
Yeah, that's, well, that's sad. I'm glad you got out of that deep funk and depression. That's not an easy thing to go through.
Yeah, me too. It was not good, but it happens. This is part of human existence. We go through that sometimes, and all we can try and do is make it through, and we can be kind to other people who might be going through that, do our best to help those going through similar things.
I just had one of those, well, kind of like a recent punch in the gut to, you know, it's been a really good year, and I wanted to bring up, because it's like the January 1st episode, you know, what did we learn in 2018? And I had something that happened a couple days ago where I won't name the client, I won't name the particular company, but it's a company I've worked for a while, and, you know, I've been working really hard to, like, try to get more so on their good side and be one of their, you know, A performers. And I get an email from my agent, and they're like, yeah, they didn't give you any offers through 2020. I'm sorry, man. I'll keep working on it. I know you really like working for them, but they basically said you're not one of their favorites. And this is, you know, a couple days after my wife and I just did, you know, a kick butt show in one of their massive theaters. And, you know, you know me, and I was talking to our buddy John Armstrong too, and, you know, I'm very critical of the show. I'm not someone to say, yeah, we knocked it out of the park, unless we actually did, or like it legit felt like it did. So it was kind of a double blow where we walked off the boat going, yeah, we did really well. And then you get this email, and you're just kind of reminded of how things are completely and many times out of your control.
Yeah.
And you can do as best of job as you can, and sometimes ultimately you're not going to be the favorite, and it's not in the cards. And it goes back to what you were just saying of, you know, just you have to just be a nice person and ultimately come back to that and not use, you know, our job as a source of happiness, because times like that, it will kick you in the face.
Yeah. Well, it's that thing about, and things like that can also sometimes be a case of, it's just, there's nothing wrong with you or what you're doing. You're just not the right fit. I think about that all the time with whether it's people or products for sale or whatever, that I can go, yeah, that's objectively a great thing. It's just not what I personally need or I'm looking for right now. Or when there's been, you know, something dating or relationship-wise, you are great. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. It's just not what I'm looking for. And it's hard to remember that when you're the rejectee in whatever situation in life, but it does happen.
Yeah. I was talking to my father-in-law, who's a very successful, runs a very successful business. And he was talking about that too, just like, you know, compatibility with people and just realizing that sometimes things just don't work out for whatever reasons. And sometimes it's just not the right fit. And even though in your head you think it is, and on paper everything should be, you know, it just sometimes doesn't work out. And I think there's a, you know, we talk a lot about Zen philosophy and Zen thought process on this podcast. And it's been a big lesson to remember those things of, all right, you literally have to let it go and not take it personally. And, you know, not react to it. The hardest thing is to not react to something, especially when somebody's saying you're not good enough, you know, yeah, when you think you are. Other than that, this is, like I said, the January 1st episode. Anything you learned in 2018 that comes to mind? Because we're recording this in 2018 on the 31st, and it comes out tomorrow. So assuming there is a 2019, you know, we don't have a Y2K situation.
Yeah.
What's some things you learned?
God,
in 2018.
It's actually, I'm kind of glad we're doing this, because, I mean, where I am, it's 3 p.m. on December 31st for me in Antarctica time. I don't even know how that works. I'm literally right now as we speak, I'm looking back through my calendar, if you hear any keyboard noises. Just trying to go, what did I even do? Like, I did so much in 2018, I don't even know. I can't remember any of it off the top of my head. It's been such a blur of things and gigs and locations.
Yeah, I had to go through, and I wanted to put just like a compilation of photos of things that went together, and you forget. You're like, oh wow, it's been a really busy year, and you're very thankful for that. And but it's so busy that you don't even, you know, really comprehend anything anymore. Just kind of, it's one thing and then going on to the next.
I'm just looking through my calendar now, just going, whole bunch of ship things and a whole bunch of other random bits and pieces and name this magic show. We did that. We did, God, so much. I don't even do, I became a lot more zen in 2018. It's not like I hadn't already been on that journey, but I think a lot of the travel has been so tumultuous and I've been bounced around between so many time zones that I've had to sort of shrink back into that inner core self-reliance because the world around me has been so shifting and inconsistent. There's that lack of external stability, so I've had to really look for internal stability because there's been none from outside.
Oh, that's a great one. I'm going to write that down. I like that internal stability. I've been on that same kind of journey too. I'm just trying to write this down. Yeah, because that's a great point. And whether, I mean, it's a very specific example for us, but if you're not somebody who, you know, is traveling to Antarctica, 41 hours, as you told me before we started, still, like, I would say people's day-to-day has got to be fairly hectic and, you know, challenges are thrown at you. And being able to find that kind of core stability within yourself is kind of a game changer. It's a big thing.
It's funny that you mentioned that because, yeah, we talked before about how even though I'm on this static, the level of hashtag blessed, which I think all hashtags are bullshit, but it's really the level of blessedness that, like, I'm experiencing right now to be here, to be able to do this. I mean, holy shit. Like all the, you know, I've made no secret on this podcast of when I quit my full-time job 10 years ago to do magic, and I spent the first 7 years of full-time magic earning less than minimum wage, basically starving in a constant state of anxiety about how the hell I was ever going to make this work. And so often questioned, I regularly considered giving it up that I might have to, I didn't want to, but it was very clear that it may not be working out at all. And so now to be in this unbelievable, having this unbelievable experience because of that I stuck with it and kept going, and because of all this dedication I've given to the magic to get good enough, to get the good reviews, to get booked and hired for this. And it's an intensely deep sense of feeling rewarded in a good way. But at the same time, to get here, I had to fly 41 hours. It was three flights, total journey time 41 hours, the long way around the world, because, again, head office tries to get the cheapest flights, which are often not the direct ones. And on one level, that's really bad and that's unpleasant. But on another level, I don't even really mind anymore. I think I've spent the year thinking a lot more about yin and yang, a thing that I keep mentioning on this podcast because it's been in my head so much, about there are great things and there are shitty things and they're all part of it. Neither is the dominant, neither is right or wrong. They're all, and you need to be thinking about both all the time.
No, I think you're right. That's totally it. And that kind of segues into what I wanted to. We brought up something that really kind of, you know, irked a lot of people on the last episode, yeah, which is pretty great.
We got more responses, I think, than any other episode.
Yeah, we got a few emails and a few Facebook messages. I'm going to read two of these, and I mean, you're welcome to read the email you got too, but I think this might be enough. This is from Sean T. It says, "Hey, Simon, maybe when someone asks you if you ever make a mistake, it's like a compliment, as in, do you ever make a mistake? Because you're absolutely killing it right now. A possibility. Ellipses." So that was one. And then our buddy Peter, who runs Slash Film, a good guy, a fan of the podcast, gave us some nice compliments. And then he said, "I thought I'd chime in with a bit of unsolicited response to something said in the last episode." My dyslexia is kicking in a little bit here. "As someone who has sat through probably 700 audience question and answer sessions after screenings, I think that you have you ever messed up a trick question isn't being misdiagnosed on the podcast. Well, I agree with your point. I think that question is the result of lay people or general public not knowing how to phrase questions. What they really mean is to ask us is to tell a story of something when something went wrong or what you did as the result. I'm sure this is because after seeing your amazing magic, they want to relate to you on a fallible level, and that's another issue. But I interview people for a living, and I'm not saying I'm amazing at it, but after doing it for over a decade and hearing all these horrible audience questions, you can usually diagnose what they are trying to ask. But I don't believe it's because most of these people are asking it because they don't believe you have failed a trick before. So that's a great point, too.
They're just trying to relate to you on a human level, and I think that's a great point Peter made. And I think we both kind of maybe jumped on that. We were both in, you were in a bitter state because you were, you know, I don't know, you were having a tough ship experience. And I had 3 glasses of wine in me, so.
That's right. I remember the Nick is mildly tipsy episode. And yeah, both of those are really good points. And it's funny when I laughed at when he said some unsolicited feedback, which is often, again, as we've commented, is great. And for me, always appreciated all the time. It's always a good thing to get that feedback. I hate how stigmatized the idea gets. Because I really appreciate both those people and everyone else who did jump in. Because, yeah, it's a good point. I know I have a tendency to get... It is a raw nerve for me. So it's just... It is something I know I get disproportionately irritated by. And I think that's genuinely insightful by Peter. That's something I never would have thought of otherwise. That this is actually just sort of clumsiness in how to ask, work out how to ask what they're actually really trying to ask.
Yeah, sure. And I can imagine just him bringing up those Q&As. I've been in rooms with Q&As and it's always so awkward. People are, you know, walk up to the microphone and you can tell their intentions are always great, but they just either freeze up or word it in such a weird way that makes everybody go, "What? What are you talking about?"
Yeah. Well, and it's also, I guess, it's something else that it's now making me theorize, thinking out loud, that, again, this issue that we, most people, learn all these terrible lessons, that we're taught that failure is bad, we're taught to not give people unsolicited feedback because most people are ignorant enough to take it badly. And maybe it's that thing about, on some subconscious level, them going, can you tell me about any of the many times you've inevitably screwed up, because that's what it takes to do anything. Maybe they on some level feel that that's almost impolite. It's like maybe our egos are too fragile to acknowledge the idea that we fail all the time because everybody does. So they word it as, has there been a time when you've screwed up? As a sort of a gentler way to ask mm-hmm. the question.
Yeah, I don't know, especially doing ships and, you know, you walk around and people come up and talk to you. And I noticed a weird thing this past ship. Everybody who came up and complimented the show was between the age of 40 and 60 and was a male. It was really weird. It's never happened to me before. And I'm like, what did I change in the show that's like relating to the baby boomer generation? I don't know. I guess that's a little bit post-baby boomer now. I don't know. I think the fact that anybody just wants to talk to you and compliment the show or, you know, get some sort of info from you it should be perceived as special. You know, I'm going, helping out Justin on tour Justin Willman on tour in February. And I think something that's really great that he's doing at his residency show at the Roosevelt in Hollywood, definitely check it out. It's kind of sold out, but if you can get tickets, go check it out. He's, after every show, going and taking photos with people. And, you know, it seats like 100 or 150 people in that room. But just genuinely taking the time to say hi to people, take photos with them, and just he's just thrilled that people are fans of the Netflix show. And I think that's something we all can kind of learn from. And there are guys that do that. When I see it done and it comes off as false, like if you're talking to people after the show or taking photos and it comes off as false, it's just such a letdown. It's like, to me, I would rather you just not come out at all, you know, leave the mystery alive. And it's something I've been working on, too, if I'm saying hello to people or taking photos with people after a show. Just trying to have a genuine moment with everybody and really listen to them because it's super hard to do. Like, you don't have any concept of how hard it is unless you've actually been through it, because everybody is either trying to tell you something or trying to, you know, chat with you for a while, and being able to, you know, kind of move people along in a polite way and genuinely interact with people. It's a skill that's taken me about three, four years to learn. I think it goes back to when people come up and compliment you or trying to, you know, say when is the time you failed. They're just trying to make a genuine connection with you. And it gets back to the human thing we're talking about. We're just trying to be better humans in general.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I think that I'm now thinking about in light of both in Sean and Peter's comments is that idea that it's easier to forget. This is so weird because, again, I became interested in magic at age 18. I was aware of it before then, but had no actual interaction with it. So I was technically an adult. You know, I think as soon as you're kind of 13, 12, 13, you've got an adult brain. You're still a kid, but you can think at the level cognitively. And so I had about 6 years of being an intelligent, self-aware human being before I ever actually learned anything about magic. And I remember from those times, I've got very clear memories of seeing magic as an outsider. And it's a profoundly unrelatable thing. It's completely counterintuitive. It's completely mysterious. No one knows anything about it, even if they think they do. And all the things they do know about it are actually wrong and misleading in various ways. And I think there's that thing, if they sense that there is a real human being there doing the show that they want to connect with, it's hard to know how to connect to it. We are, as magicians, very intrinsically unrelatable people in a lot of ways. Even if we go out of our ways to be nice people and engaging, so much of what we do is still really kind of fundamentally a mystery. And so it's very difficult for most people to know how to go about it. So it makes sense it comes through quite awkwardly sometimes and misguidedly, even with the best of intentions.
Yeah, totally. And it's just, learning to combat, but not really, just kind of make it work. And it sounds like these are like specific problems to performers and people like in our position, but I don't think it is. I think this is, if you work in an office or you work, I don't know, at I was going to say Sears, but they're out of business now. work in like a retail situation. Still just like genuinely listening to people and just having a back and forth. I will say, like, the one thing I do like about living in LA, like, it has stereotypes and a good chunk of them are true and I see them on a daily basis. But I do notice that when you go out to a restaurant or you go to a store, there is a bit of a more of a human connection, I've noticed. I don't know, I could be making this up, but I feel like in my experience in LA in the past 3 years, it's a little bit easier to chat with people. There's like the pressure is gone, like this barometer to, you know, to really have a connection is kind of isn't there. I know, I hope this makes sense, but I feel like it's a little bit easier to chat with people in LA just because I think we're surrounded by more people and more outgoing personalities. And I noticed that I've been in Detroit for a week or so, and you notice it's a little bit more of a struggle sometimes to chat with strangers. And I'm not saying I'm good at it. I am terrible at it, but I noticed there's like always a weird awkwardness among strangers here. And there's like a weird pressure to either to make an impression or to be completely silent. So I don't know. I'm not sure if that connects with what you're saying or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's the LA thing I can absolutely relate to, because even with all its many well-documented flaws, LA, of every place on earth I've had the privilege of seeing and experiencing, LA by far is the most accepting place I've ever found. And I think part of it is because it's so huge, its population is so huge, and there's so many profoundly different kinds and groups of people, not just ethnically or culturally, but in terms of what you want out of life and the way you're approaching life. There was an article I read, I can't remember who wrote it, but he had the line, LA has no presumed default mode of usage. You know, it's like in Paris, you're meant to be fashionable and stylish and eat croissants, and in Melbourne, you're supposed to be kind of cool and artistic and go to underground bars and music clubs and things like that. Whereas in LA, there's a place for everybody, and everyone is constantly exposed to so many deeply different kinds of human beings with deeply different wants and needs and objectives that you end up being more accepting and embracing of just how utterly profoundly different people are, and hence more kind of open to connecting across the board.
Yeah, and we certainly live in our little bubble out there. I notice it every time I leave. You know, I did a gig in Utah recently, and then doing stuff in either more rural areas or coming back home here. It's definitely its own little bubble and its own little thing. There's advantages to LA, and there's many disadvantages too. I'm not saying it's better than other places, but in terms of human connection, I think if there's a 1 to 10 rating scale, I would say we're at like a 7, as yeah. opposed to other places like, you know, other places I've lived, it's been like a 4 or a 3, yeah. Really stretching it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that a big subtext to a lot of this, it's again one of those, there are lots of little pithy quotes of wisdom out there in the world, but one that really stuck with me was, again, I can't remember who this is attributed to, but every person you meet is facing intense, painful struggles that you know nothing about. Be kind.
Yeah, that's in the book, The 4 Agreements? The 5 Agreements? Certain number of agreements. yeah, like, it was...
the best thing I've taken from that is don't take it personally, because exactly what you said, you don't know what people are going through, and you don't know what that person's day has been like. Not an easy thing to do, because there are times when you just want to like lash out or just go, that person's a jerk. I think just being able to go, I have no, maybe somebody in their family died today, that's why they're in a bad mood, so just don't take it personally.
I feel very reflective and mellow. I'm less annoyed.
2018 reflective episode.
It's funny. I've been thinking a lot about those comments we got about the hard line on people not understanding the failure questions, and they're good points. And it still does annoy. I still think that there is this fundamentally unhealthy, naive attitude to failure. But they were really thought provoking, and I really appreciate the people who wrote in with that food for thought. All of them. We mentioned two, but there were others. Because it's got the thing. That's how you get better, right? Trying a thing, putting a point of view out there, and then getting feedback and realizing, oh wait, no one ever knows the whole story, present company included. We're always learning, and we're always wrong about everything to some degree. And as long as we realize that, and stay open to that, you might get slowly, asymptotically less wrong over time.
And it's funny, we were talking about taking feedback in the last episode, and now we are taking the feedback. It comes full circle. So we are trying to learn from our mistakes and learn from ourselves, even if that's going to fail again in the near future.
Yeah, which is the nature of it, right? That's, it's nice. I quite like that we get to put our money where our mouth is and go, yeah, valid. It's exactly right. there's plenty of hypocrites in the world.
Certainly, I'm very hypocritical in many aspects of my life, but I think it's important to be self-aware. So if you're self-aware and you know you're being hypocritical, I'm not saying it's okay, but I think it makes it a little bit better.
I actually got to have a really fun experience. I got to be back in Melbourne just for a week before Antarctica, and it was really nice. I'd really been missing home, like real home and family and friends I've known for decades. And one of the things that was really cool, there's this great thing running in Melbourne at the moment called Magicians at Work. And it happens, I think, every second month at the Melbourne Arts Centre in one of their development rooms, like a little theatre room. And there's such great support for the arts in Australia generally. It's not perfect and it could be better, but it's so much better than most other countries, particularly the US. And this is partly council funded, where they have a lot of these development programs. And one of them in conjunction with the Australian Institute of Magic, a magic club over there, they run these things where a bunch of magicians sign up and do tricks, and they invite the public. I think it's free, first come, first serve for tickets, from memory. And the public is told, this is going to be a bunch of magicians trying out new material and looking for feedback on it. And all the punters are given index cards and pencils and encouraged to write down feedback and leave it at the end for the magicians on what they liked, what they didn't like. And it's just everything great about everything we've been talking about. And I did it. I was there on one of the nights and did a bit, got some feedback from the audience on the cards, but they also asked me to be they always get like one sort of quote unquote expert feedback person that's normally someone from theater or another field or whatever. But I got to be the special guest expert feedback to give feedback to all the other performers. And I realized a lot of the feedback I was giving, I had to prefix it by going, now, full disclosure, many of the notes I'm going to be giving you are notes that I would give myself as well, things I still struggle with and don't always manage to do right. Because some of these things are tricky. They can be lifelong journeys to try and do them better. Things like audience engagement and audience awareness and all those things, and even making eye contact with the whole room is still a thing I struggle with and try and remind myself to do constantly. So again, that's sort of, there's even if you're not always taking your own advice, you are taking it. It's just hard to take in terms of hypocrisy. As long as you're aware of it, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, that's a great note. And that just kind of establishes that you're like, I don't think I'm better than you people. I'm just, I'm letting you know that I am going through these same issues. And it redefines the fact that, in live performance, the effect or the piece or the bit that you're trying to create is never really finished. You should always kind of keep working on it, and whether that's yourself or whether that's the bit itself, it's always kind of evolving, which I think that's what makes live performance special, is that, maybe it's the same thing you saw a couple of years ago, but it's different and hopefully better because you've been nitpicking it for so long.
And also you're different. I mean, you're never finished as a human being. And I think that's the biggest thing, is being, once you're aware of that and embrace that, you will on average, continue to evolve in a better direction, hopefully. There was something Douglas Adams said way back about he wrote his first few, I think he wrote the first three Hitchhiker's books. I forget the exact timeline of it. And then he had to take a few years off because he was kind of out of material. He hadn't lived. He'd been writing rather than living. And he had to go out there into the world and see more things and learn more things. And he had to change as a person through experience. And consequently, the books he wrote later were very different because he was a different person. He'd been changed by it, which is an important thing to embrace.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point to make. Yeah, just being able to like walk away from something and realize that, you know, you're not evolving as much as you think you are, or you're just kind of stuck. I just want to thank everybody who supports us on the Patreon. If you could, like, pause the podcast or immediately when it's done, please give us, like, 5 stars on Apple Podcast or Google or Stitcher, wherever you listen to us on. It makes such a big difference on getting more people to listen to it. 5 stars and, like, a quick 3-sentence review of, hey, I like this, or hey, this is terrible.
Well, and if you like it and think something could be better about it, let us know. As you've seen, we take feedback very well, I think, if I do say so myself, and constructively, it's always appreciated.
Yeah, and I think right now, we're trying to figure out what is next for this podcast, because it's evolved from, I think that's what 2019 will be. It's evolved from this kind of like interview show where I interview magicians to you and I having like these weird, deep Zen conversations. I guess let us know if that's working for you or if you want to hear some more interviews or what would be kind of a fun way to take this podcast. Because I've said it many times, you know, I'm at the point right now where I'm like, I don't know if we should keep doing this. I feel like we're just repeating ourselves. And then somebody comes up and says, you know, at the castle says, hey, I really love the podcast. Thanks so much for doing it. Or we get messages from people who say we really love the podcast, and they give us, you know, notes or ideas based on things we've said in past episodes. So I think as long as it's helping people or helping ourselves or having this weird communal thing, we will keep doing it. But I certainly don't want it to get stale. I mean, I love something Donald Glover once said of Childish Gambino. He just walked away from it. He's not doing Childish Gambino anymore. And he said, I really love endings. I love when things finish. And I'm certainly not saying I want to wrap this up or finish it, but I do want to make sure it's evolving, because the fact that we have a bingo card out there where I think we've touched on all the things. And if you got a bingo, please send us a photo. I don't want this to be so repetitive, because I do feel like we can, and more so myself, I think you're probably much better than I am of thinking of new things or new experiences, but I don't want this to be a repetitive, a back and forth of, you know, failure, getting better, taking notes.
Macau, Simon just got back from China.
Where the hell is Simon right now? We don't know.
Somewhere. He doesn't even know half the time. Literally.
That's true.
It's again, it's something that Mike, my friend on the ship, talks about a lot, how there was a time a few months back we were hanging out in LA, and I mentioned... He asked me when I was leaving town next, and I said, I think it was a Thursday, and I said, flying out Saturday morning, and he said, where to? And I said, can't remember, and I really couldn't. I just didn't even know where I was flying in 2 days' time. It just wasn't relevant to anything I had to do in the immediate future. So often I really don't know.
Yeah, just as long as you get to the airport and know where your gate is, yeah, exactly. That's all that matters.
It's the, did we ever talk about the Sherlock Holmes principle that... I accidentally found I was following that I think it's in Study in Scarlet, the very first novel, where written from the perspective of Watson, where he's learning about his bizarre new flatmate. And he discovers that Holmes, to Watson's shock, while apparently being an intelligent man, didn't know that the Earth orbited around the sun, which every educated man at the time would know. And Holmes responded to, and I'm paraphrasing, but, Watson, it doesn't make a lick of difference to my life or my work if the Earth goes around the sun goes around the Earth, or they both go around a rhinoceros. I have too much stuff I need to spend my brain power on without worrying about things that would not affect any of my decisions or choices. And I just thought that there's sort of, you can look at that in a couple of ways. And there's, in one way, it's a little bit excessive, but it's something I think about. If there is information that wouldn't change any of my actions, there's so much stuff vying for brain space that I need to think about. And I am constantly overwhelmed. I exist in a constant state of overwhelmedness, just trying to make it through the damn day without forgetting to do something really important that I just don't, I wish I did, but I just don't have the brain space to think about or pay attention to anything that's not absolutely critical, unless it's so interesting that it gets in there anyway because it's recreational. And I think about that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, just being aware of your own flaws, too. It goes back to being self-aware of, you know, that you have to get these things done, and these are struggles you go through, and, you know, I certainly have my own struggles as well, and that we're all just humans trying to figure it out. But I love that. I love that that line of, if it goes around the rhinoceros, because that's really it. For so many people, like, facts like that, yeah, you should know those things, but it really doesn't affect their day-to-day life.
Yeah. Whereas then I spend 3 hours reading articles on Wikipedia about quantum physics just because I'm fascinated by it. Well, that's the difference. It's what you, if something you find something interesting, then that becomes its own intrinsic reward as well. It's just the sort of the excited stimulation of learning about something you find fascinating.
Mm-hmm. We're not saying you shouldn't learn things. You should always be learning things.
Quite the but the details of
directly affect your day.
Yeah, the details of which airport I happen to be going through en route to the ship gig, that's not interesting or useful knowledge. It really, best case, I might discover some cool thing at the airport to check out, but I really don't mind. It's okay. I'm happy to let that one go.
There you go. That's it. And that's what we've learned in 2018.
Let it go, cut to Frozen theme song.
Oh, man. Oh, I should cut to that right now, but I'm not going to because Disney's going to sue me.
So. Oh, they will sue the shit out of you. Man, that is a litigation-happy company.
Oh, you have no idea. On that note, I'm going to wrap up this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah, and have a great 2019. You know, do something great with your life. Take a walk. Me and my friend Taylor Hughes and I have discovered that walking is a great medicine for stress. So that's something I've learned. And it's just something extra I'll throw out there in 2018. Simon, anything quick you want to throw out that you've learned? Like a one sentence?
Treadmill disc. It's happening.
Boom.
It's working out. Yeah.
That's it. So it's just, that's what we've learned in 20, to wrap up this episode. Just go take a walk down a treadmill or outside in the woods. Whatever you want to do, just take a walk.
Just get... Go for a walk. Don't use screens 2 hours or less before sleeping. Drink more water. Eat healthily. You know how. Lean meats, vegetables, minimal carbohydrates and processed sugars. Just get the little things right. Just work on that, if nothing else. Because then everything gets just a little bit better on average. Be kind to people.
We've talked so little about magic in this episode, it makes me very happy.
Yeah, but magic is life, and life is magic. I don't even mean that. That was just me filling the space with a vague platitude of something to say.
You're like, I can't even finish that. I can't get that out.
And it's kind of true, though. I mean, in a way, because what do we do as magicians? A lot of it really is actually just the spaces around the magic is so much of it, and what actually makes it work on stage. Like you said, who you are on stage every time you do a performance can change massively, and that totally changes the thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. So, we were talking about being a better human, but it really does come down to that. What is that presence on stage? And that, I think, ultimately affects whatever you're performing. Music, magic, art.
Completely.
XYZ. Okay, we've gone on way too many tangents. Have a great 2019, everybody.
We appreciate you all.
Appreciate you all. My name is Nick Paul.
I am Simon Carnell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.